welcome to episode 58 of Wing Sauce, the Dustin, Tyler, and Connor edition, because no one has worn 58 for the Red Wings.
Or just the Wing Sauce edition.
Just the Wing Sauce edition. So,
Wing Sauce on the back of a jersey.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That'll be 58.
So, but we started off with Dustin last week. So, Connor, how are you doing?
Wow. Connor, you got recognized. Holy shit.
I know. Finally, you know, my worth is being shown. I'm good. It's been sunny the past couple of days, so that's been great. It's a little gray and rainy today on a Sunday, but it's a good day for some house projects inside. And Dustin, I know you were talking about you just lost power, which is unfortunate. So hopefully, you have power back on now, so that's nice. I think it was only a couple minutes that it was out, so nothing too bad there. But overall, I would say I'm doing well. And this is the day after a Red Wings victory, which we can't
back
say
to
that
back,
well.
Baby.
Back to back victories. I mean, in the past two games, they're number one in the league, tied for first place in the league.
I don't even know how to follow with that, but yeah, it has been super nice out. Yesterday was gorgeous, 50 degrees. Today, I think it's supposed to be 50, but it's raining here. So
yeah.
Let's get rid of this.
Wash
snow.
Away the rest of the snow. Exactly, wash away the rest of that snow. My neighbor's ice mountain that they built in front of my other driveway is finally
subsided.
Melting. Yeah, subsided. I still have to kind of ramp it with my truck, but I'll let it slide, I suppose.
Yeah, at least you don't have like a lowrider Subaru or something.
Right? Scratching the whole entire front bumper. a Camaro or something.
your car's just doing a balancing act on this big ice chunk. But, boys, this is not only is it not normal for us to talk about back-to-back wins, but consecutively scoring five goals in those wins.
Which is surprising for the Wings, because that's one thing we talked about, is they were not scoring.
Right, and so I guess they still have a game today against Chicago. We're recording again on Sunday. They play tonight at 7 p.m., but Saturday's game, it was a true five goal game. Empty net.
Oh, yeah.
Still counts, which is what happened with Sam Gagner and his hat trick. But
so hold up. Let's start with the first Nashville.
Yeah,
game.
Yeah. We didn't for talk, sure.
Let's start with that one. Because I didn't recall as I just watched the recap before we started. The first goal that they got lucky on when Ernie got burnt, and then Forsberg burnt. Broke Juice's ankles. somehow there was a no goal call. I watched it and I was along with Mickey. I honestly didn't feel like there was goaltender interference. It should have been a good goal.
I don't think so either. I'm not exactly sure what they saw.
Yeah, no, I'm which definitely would have swayed the game in my opinion.
He had time to reset easily. Like,
yeah, not, and not it didn't even that, get, no, he didn't even touch get him. Really hit. Yeah. it was super weird. Like, and even when he did get hit, it was us hitting him into the crease area.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. Like, I don't think that they got that one wrong. Simply
they
put,
did. Yeah. And it was weird because they called it a goal, and I could see that if they didn't, right, they called it a goal and then looked at it and then changed it, which if anything, you know,
that
kind
means
of
that there's enough evidence to overturn it. Yeah, that's so
yeah,
weird.
Exactly. So it was strange. I don't know. Yeah, we're all in agreement there. It was just weird, but hey, we needed those small victories, and I don't feel bad about that at all with all the bad luck that the Red Wings have had starting off with the draft and then all throughout the season so far. So
no, right. And so on that, hold on, Tyler, on that though, I feel like that actually boosted Bernie's confidence, because he looked good overall, I feel like, in that game. I don't feel like he looked terrible, even though they lost 2-0. I think it was a bad loss.
No, not at all. And like, I think like having confidence there, having a two-goal loss for a goalie, like I remember losing 2-0 and we would have our goal. Like our goalies don't feel bad about that. Like, of course they want to win, but you're expected to get three goals. If you can get three goals for a goalie, then it's kind of back on the goalie. So with the Red Wings averaging, I mean, well, five goals back to back will bring their average up. But they had a stat in that Nashville game talking about how they've had no more than two goals. They listed a number of games that they haven't scored more than twice. It's a crazy amount that they haven't scored more than two goals, which is really bad. So I'm glad they're picking up the goals here for the goalies, because I think that the goalies overall, being on the last place team, they've kind of earned some, in my opinion, I think they've earned some credit here, and they should start getting some W's, because, man, they've had a tough job. Blackhawks had 36 shots, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
I've got some stats for you guys, actually, for Nashville. So Glendening loves playing the Preds for some reason. in just this season alone, 3 games played, he has 5 points against the Preds. And since 2018 and 2019, he has 9 points in 6 games versus the Preds.
Yeah, man, he's an all-star if they just play the Preds for 82 games.
So Tyler, on that, we'll skip to the next Nashville game. I don't really have much to say on the first one.
Yeah, no,
but
yeah.
Glendening, though, that first shot, great backhand, hard work in front of the net. I literally messaged you boys right after that goal, and I was like, that's exactly what I want to see every time they're in that zone.
Especially from a person like Glendening or a Helm or somebody that maybe doesn't, that works, that should be working very hard on a shift by shift basis, that doesn't have the skills of a top 3, top 6 forward, you know, like, yep. The only way you're going to put up points or bring value to your team is in doing all the little things, like for Glendening, winning those faceoffs is huge, battling in front of the net, getting that
number one in the NHL, right?
Yeah, I don't know if he still is what he was as far as like a week ago when I last looked, but
he's at like 64. Just over 64%, which
is ridiculous. Yeah. Ridiculous. We talk about faceoff percentage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, so I'm with you, Dustin. That's huge. I think that's exactly what you want to see from a guy like that. That's how they build confidence, and it's going to hopefully continue. Like it's such a confidence game that I don't know if everybody thinks that way. I just know back when I was playing, man, if you get a goal early in a game, like watch a player, if he scores in the first 10 minutes of a game, they play on a different level. Just having that confidence and having that flexibility is to lean back and say, I already had my point for today. Now I can just go out there and play and do what I do best, which is so weird because you should be doing that no matter what, but it's so mental.
I see what you're saying, though. You feel good after you get that point, and the confidence just rolls from there, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean that's, the whole team.
Right.
The whole team after that goal was just excited the whole entire game.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that we need to mention too, guys, I mean, I'm sure you noticed this as well, but Rinne was terrible.
That's so funny. I literally have that in my notes. Pekka Rinne looked like shit.
Awful.
The one rebound where he kind of threw it up and just didn't know where it was, Mickey and Ken were talking about it, just like, what the fuck? Like, he didn't say what the fuck, but
I wouldn't put it past Mickey.
I was going to say, Mickey, I think I heard a subtle fuck underneath his breath, so you're not wrong.
No, but it was just one of those things. You're just like, you know, when you think of Pekka Rinne, he's a quality goaltender, and that was just a shitty, you have to know where that rebound is. You can't just throw it up and just not have any tracking.
The rebound control, and that's one thing, not to bring it back to the Red Wings, but hey, we are a Red Wings podcast. I will say the past three games, just watch Bernier's rebound control. It's really, really good. He is controlling the puck. That's how you can tell a goalie is on their game early in the game. When they're taking these shots from the outside and those pucks are going in the corner, they're not going, there's no rebound in the slot for any follow-up shot or anything like that. But yeah, Rinne was doing all of that. I mean, that's how we scored, is a lot of those were just bad. I mean, there's a below the goal line goal, which you don't see that too often. There's rebound follow-up shot. That's
so that behind the goal line goal, though, I like that. Like that's kind of goals I want to see set up.
And
that's the thing. And that's one thing I noticed at that Nashville game, is they were throwing more pucks at net. Tyler, do you have that statistic on how many shots?
For just Nashville? Game?
Yeah, that Nashville game, just out of curiosity.
I'll pull it up right now, but you guys continue to talk while I bring that up.
Yeah, so I just feel like that was a main point, is they're just throwing more pucks in net, or I guess they just had better control in the offensive zone. I feel like they weren't playing back in the defensive zone the whole entire time like we've seen them play.
Tyler and I talked like really quick before when you weren't on, Dustin, but we were saying like, man, the team, when they're on early in the season, we talked about it. They were just dump and chase the entire time, get in the neutral zone and dump it in. That they're carrying the puck, they're gaining that confidence in the neutral zone and taking it over. Now, I'm not saying that this team is like turning over a new leaf and going to start winning, but I just think that that's the you can lose games and show that you're a real hockey team by controlling the offensive zone and bringing the puck in, making plays, having 3-on-2s, and yeah, you're going to get burned and you're going to get burned. They're going to throw it back to Kane. He's had some odd man rushes even yesterday's game. Ha. But you
kept him silent.
What'd you say?
Kept him silent. You ain't getting 400 out of the Red Wings, boys.
Burns robbed him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. We'll get to that.
Yeah, but so I have the shot statistics here. So Nashville actually outshot the Wings 39-32.
But they got 32 shots, though. We normally don't even get out of the 20s.
Right.
Like, we're like in the low 20s most of the time when it comes to shots.
Yeah, it's like 21 to like 40 is the shot.
That's the one thing they've been consistent with in terms of all of the statistics, aside from the faceoff percentage. Right. The shots on goal have been much better this year, with, I guess, exception to a couple games where they just got totally blown out. Yeah. So, okay. But yeah, when you look at that game on paper, it looks like it was pretty even, but honestly, man, Detroit just controlled that entire game.
Oh yeah. Gagne with his hattie, 9 years and 23 days since his last one.
Yeah, that was like one of the largest
what
fans. Did you send that
stat.
Over, Dustin? I think
yeah,
you
sent
that
over.
Yeah,
so some of the names on there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
Dick Clapper.
Heard of him.
Dick Clapper. If he had an actual like clap bomb, that would be so great.
My other favorite though is Dick Duff.
Dick Duff, baby. Oh my God. It's just those like old timey names. Like no one's gonna name their kid Dit or Dick.
Yeah, Dick Clapper, right?
He's Richard.
So Richard's not a common name right now.
Yeah, no, but Dick Clapper is like a kind of guy that's going to be having a cigarette on the bench after he just scored his hat trick.
So he played from 1933 to 1945. So probably,
yeah,
the
maybe
father
even
of the clap bomb.
The yeah,
it says NHL posted. Shout out, Mr. Clapper.
Oh, that's amazing.
NHL.
But,
trolls.
I mean, what did you guys have anything else to say during
the Nashville game? I did. So on that one goal, that interesting no call on Glendinning in the corner, kind of it looked like he almost tripped him up in the corner, and that's when they got that breakaway and scored. But
when we scored, right?
When we scored, yep.
Yeah, that was a penalty.
100%. And so
I
another one was
that one.
Oh, it was in the corner in the defensive zone, right? Like on the
yep.
wall. And yep. Glendinning tripped. Like that's what started the whole thing. Is Glendinning tripped him. There was no call. Got the puck and then scored right after that. Pretty much, like it was all part of the same play. And I think even Mickey said something too.
They got away with one there.
Yeah. Like it was a clear penalty. But hey, same thing. Like we need the breaks. We haven't had any puck luck, and those are the breaks that you need.
So one thing to note, Larkin got injured in that game. I think it was in the second period. I'm not sure. Does anyone
have
the
third? He was late to coming out on the third period, but because he was injured. But yeah, he came back.
Was it upper body?
Yeah, I think it was upper body. It was I want to say it was like below the goal line in the offensive zone. He kind of got hit, and it was on his. Is that the one that he got cross checked on in the bicep almost, or is that somebody else?
I'm not sure I didn't see it. That's why I was kind of curious if anyone saw that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It might have been a different player. I'm thinking
it wasn't a play that you look at and you're like, whoa, he's definitely injured. It was one of those kind of freak incidents where, you know, I think he's listed as day to day currently, but still it doesn't help to have him out of the lineup.
So there's a TSN post that a basketball player, one of the reporters asked him, like, hey, you know, what's wrong with you? And he's like, upper body. or upper body injury. And then they're like, and he says like my finger or something like that. And then he's like, the talkie lingo. Like, oh my God. I was like, yeah, that's pretty true.
It is so true. Yeah. When did they move to that though, guys? Because they used to say exactly what the injury was. And now, is it to kind of protect players?
It is. It's to protect the players, because if they start saying, oh, he has a bad knee, there's some players out there that are going to go for that dude's knee.
Yeah. I remember when I was playing and like our coach would say, we would have the game before and they'd look at the injury report and they'd be like, hey, just let you guys know, 14 on the other team has a broken thumb like a month ago, but now this is his first game back. So on his left hand. So if you want to, like on a shot, if you want to slash the hand, something like that, like that's free game. So I think
that
they're trying
sense.
To do that. And we wouldn't do that if we didn't know that, obviously.
Right. And again, that's not something you should do, but it happens. Let's just be
real. I mean, it's not like, We're not.
Connor's
we're not
like, I was told to, so.
It's on your hand. Like, come on. So,
For sure.
Injury, you're gonna play through it.
I was just testing the glove's durability.
Yeah, get better gloves.
Right. No doubt. No doubt. But so do you want to move to the Chicago game?
Yeah, for sure.
Wait. Before we get carried away, these past couple wins, and they played well, but it is Nashville and Chicago, and I know Chicago's been playing well. Nashville has struggled, but they're not great teams, so I just want to get, you know,
well, yeah, set no,
context, right?
You're definitely right, Connor, but this is, we have to be able to find some silver linings here with this season.
Chicago's fourth in the division.
That's what I'm saying. But like, I think that they surprised a lot of people, and I could see them.
I called at the beginning of the season.
What'd you say?
I said they're going to be a decent team in the beginning of the season.
I did too. Tyler's the only one that didn't.
Ooh, yeah. Tyler. Well, get him.
Yeah, I already said that I was going to eat my words, but
I know. And I'm allowing
see,
you.
I can actually admit that, and when Dustin still can't do that with Bobby Ryan.
Whoa. Oh, let's talk about Bobby Ryan real quick. 22 games played, 6 goals, 6 assists, 12 points, leading the team. Fuck you, Tyler.
As I said, exciting at times.
Nope. I don't give a shit, bro. He's leading the team right now, so he's been exciting.
This
in 22
is a garbage
games.
Team.
Dude, okay, we've been over this, though. So you can't use the garbage team aspect.
You use it all the time.
I don't use that. You use that all the time. We talked about the whole Mantha thing and Mantha and Larkin.
All right, let's not get all over the place. Where are we going to start first with Chicago? You want to talk about how Ryan got involved?
Oh, no. I'm just talking about Bobby Ryan, how he's leading the team in points.
Yeah.
That's it.
You change his underwear for him. We get it.
Okay.
I'm not in this conversation. So look, for once, I'm not part of the argument.
Connor's just sitting over there eating his popcorn. He's just like, fuck you guys. No, but one thing I did see on Ryan and your boy Mantha is talking about some trade bait.
Well, I have that as a discussion a little bit later on too. But I think so. Number one for Chicago, Svechnikov and Nielsen back in the lineup. I thought that was kind of an odd move, but they both had great. Svechnikov with. That was his season debut, and they both netted a goal and had a helper as well. So that was good to see.
Well, that's Svechnikov's first career goal or first career goal of the season?
Just this season.
Okay, that's what I was confused about. I had it wrote down with parentheses because I wasn't sure if that was his first goal of the season. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Juice, though, looked good. Stopped the 38 power play.
41.
Was it 41?
41 attempts.
It's even worse. 41 attempts. Excuse me. Thank you, Tyler. 41 attempts without a fucking goal. Terrible.
Yeah.
So thank you, Juice, for that.
And, you know, I've said that, you know, I liked the pickup, and he's not like a offensive dynamo by any means, but when he has the puck, I mean, he does these little things that people should appreciate, you know, like the stutter step and the shot. I mean, it's little things like that that'll get a goalie to second guess. And I mean, it was a great shot. He's done that twice now.
So you're talking about someone that impresses you. So someone that was impressing me at the beginning of the season that's not as much now, Mark Stahl.
I've noticed that the past couple of games. Actually, maybe even impressing? Like only the last two games where. I don't know what it is. Maybe he's just like, I don't know.
Are we talking about his play? Or are we talking about like production?
Play.
Okay.
Play. I don't care about production. He's a defenseman. More or less is just in the defensive zone. His play, it just seems kind of not even haphazard. Just like he doesn't give a fuck. Or I don't know. It just seemed like I was watching the goal or the game, the couple of the recaps and when he's playing defense. It just seems like he's not aggressive. It's just, oh, I'll just kind of stand over here. Hopefully the puck doesn't come by me. I don't know. Just
not doing I didn't watch close enough to like make it true. I just noticed on a couple plays where I'm like, I don't know if like what was going on. The one thing I do want to be careful when I look at these things, and I hope that like other fans do the same, is that when you're looking at whether a player is like being lazy or looks out of place or being slow, you really have to make sure that they're like not out there for the past minute in the defensive zone. It's really tough to
you know, when they score a goal and that like a guy looks terrible because he just got walked. And then you look that he was just out there for a minute and 45 seconds because they got stuck in the defensive zone because the forward couldn't get it out. It's like, that's really tough for a defenseman because they look bad. And the fan, like that breakdown clip is being shown, but they don't show the half wall where the forward just lost a battle. And now the defenseman's getting like just smoked, especially in the second period when there's a long change, because that happens all the time for defensemen specifically.
Yes. And good also point, to piggyback off that, Connor, it's not just, you know, if they've been out there for a long time, but like, it depends on who he's paired up with. Cause I know Hronek is, we all know he's more offensive minded, right? So he's more inclined to pinch. And if you do that, you're going to leave your other guy out to dry. You know what I mean? And I've been a defenseman in that scenario where countless 2-on-1s and there's only so much you can do. Not saying that's the only downfall of Mark Stahl. I'm with Connor. I haven't really paid that much attention to it, but I know that just generally speaking, he's a good shutdown D-man. And I honestly can't say whether or not he's been regressing. I guess that's something I'll have to pay attention to in the coming games.
Yeah, it was just something I noticed. I was kind of curious if you guys, you know, saw what I was seeing. I'm not saying he's terrible. I'll just have to watch it more.
I just noticed a few times and just want to, it's more a call out for myself that I have to be careful on some of the things that I'm watching. Like I said, especially in the second period, it does get tough. I forget what game it was, but there was a forward that was out there for like over 2 minutes and you could just see them dead out there. And they couldn't get off. And so they looked awful. Yeah, I think they scored against that. So
when they're doing like the C cuts and everything and not actually doing strides, you got to get off the ice.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can't when you're in your own defensive zone. That's obviously a bad change. But yeah, guys, with Detroit and Chicago, I mean, again, they were consistent. They carried their momentum from that 5-2 win over Nashville. I thought that they controlled the game. They did very well. And not to say that Chicago didn't play well.
So I thought Subban looked kind of bad.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, he had some bad goals. I didn't think that he looked great. Some of the goals were definitely not his fault, but there was a few that he probably would like to have back.
100%, and not to discredit him at all, but it's just one of those things. It's just one of those things to kind of put the whole perspective into check. That's where I was going.
And that's kind of why I wanted to bring up that Rene, like in the Nashville game, Rene was not good at all. But I'm happy with at least the last two games. I guess we'll see if that momentum continues, because Chicago is going to be hungry today, man. Even though they have our number this year, the series is 1-5 right now with the Red Wings versus the Blackhawks. So we'll see how tonight bodes out for them. Anything else on the Detroit Chicago game?
You mentioned a bad change in the defensive zone. There was a goal where there's a bad change to Debrinkit had a breakaway.
That's what they should call it. A Debrinkaway.
I know. I like that. I'm trademarking that now.
Yeah, put it on a t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. But so that was one of those points where Tyler, they shouldn't have made a change, but they did.
Right.
I don't even know who was on the, I don't even know who it was. I think it was number 44. Is that even Juice. A number on our team? Oh, well, fuck you, Juice.
You got a goal. Good for you. But you also got a minus. So fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, on the minuses, we're still not for goal differential. Ottawa's still beating us, just so you know.
Yeah, nice. Well, you know, the thing is, guys, we if we continue to, you know, win games, we're gonna be looking great in the green jacket category.
Yeah. So one thing I want to point out is we're playing 52 games, or that's what the schedule's set at. If you look at the standings, there's a lot of teams, 24, 22. A couple teams have, you know, 16 games played, 17 games played, 18. What are they going to do at the end of the season? Are they going to try to group those games in? Are they just going to say, hey, the best of 40?
I'm hoping that they are looking at, I'm sure they are looking at this now, but I'm hoping they're looking at it now and trying to look at open games where a team that is only has the 17, 18 games played, they're trying to fit that into one of their days off. where they're going to be playing a lot more like now, so they don't do that at the end of the season right before playoffs.
And that's what I was going to say, Connor. So if they're trying to squeeze those games in, is that going to be detrimental to those teams that had to play, say, 4 in a week or 5 in a week, right, to get to the 52 games because they had COVID restrictions? It's just something I noticed. It's getting to the point now where 30 games out, roughly, from the season being over.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of catch-up to be done for a lot of teams.
Dallas at 16 games. And one thing to note on Dallas is their goal differential is a +1, and they're sitting in last place. But they only have 16 games played, so.
Dang. Yes.
Yeah, well, I don't know what their win-loss, though. What is that?
6-6.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough.
6-4. So.
Be a team to watch.
Yeah, no. I mean, Dallas is always exciting to watch. It's just one of those teams that's kind of weird just because they're in Dallas. It just seems like a weird hockey town.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that they're a team that, you know, we saw it last year. Once they get going, you look out. So
Toronto. So a lot of it's funny because Toronto at the beginning of the season was a terrible pick for the Stanley Cup, and now they're like +800. So they've moved up quite a bit as far as being a contender for the Cup this year.
Yeah, I don't know, man. This is what's so weird about, you know, the teams only playing their division teams, right? I guess I don't really know how to put that. But yeah, teams only playing teams in their own division.
I know what you mean.
That's what's going to make playoffs so odd because you don't know what the other team looks like.
So did we talk about playoffs? Has anyone seen the playoff structure? What are they doing with that? Are they taking the... So in the
top
in the division,
four from each division.
Right, so top four from each division. So then the top four from each division are playing each other, correct? To figure out who's going to be moving to the conference?
Yeah, in the first round. And then I'm not sure what they're going to be. Actually, first and second round probably end up like that. And then you start to go play teams from other divisions.
All right, so the next question is, how do you have the East and the West? Is it still the same thing?
I don't know if they're doing... I honestly don't know.
Or is it just like... It doesn't fucking matter. You could have two teams in the same division essentially play each other.
Wouldn't
it be lit though if you had two if it was just the best two teams in the fucking league, like instead of doing a divisional?
I think that's what they're doing this year in a sense. Well, how can I put this?
I know what you're saying, Tyler. It's just weird to think about because
there's going to be no conference winners this year. If you look at NHL.com, they only have stats for the division in the league, whereas last year they had for your division, the conference, and the league itself as well. So there won't be a conference championship this year.
Okay, so no one's winning that trophy.
No, not the conference ones, at least.
Okay.
This is just kind of an asterisk on history with that one, I guess. But yeah,
just interesting. First time ever, I think, probably, right, since it's been established.
Yeah, that's a good point too. I would imagine. I think that this is it has to be.
Yeah. So interesting.
But I think, are you guys ready to talk about some trade bait?
Bait of trades.
Bait of trades.
That's fine.
Who wants to kick it off?
So, I mean, I'll kick it off because I kind of brought it up earlier. I read an article. First, I read the article, and it was kind of funny because I talk a lot about Mantha, as everybody knows, and Tyler actually put it back on me. He's like, okay, who would you trade for then? Or what would be a trade for Mantha if it's such a problem on the team? And honestly, it was kind of made me shut up because it's kind of hard to think about who could we trade for at, you know, $6 million.
And
that's going to be the same kind of quality player, the same person or that the team would be willing to take Mantha to exchange, because I was telling Tyler, I don't want draft picks. So that's the hardest part, is because I feel like a lot of the trades are going to be around a draft pick and then somebody that's either a prospect player or, you know, a lower six forward or something of that nature. It's not going to be a apple to apple comparison or apple trade, if you will.
And that was my whole point with asking you that question, Dustin, is because right now when you look at it, it's not like he's a fringe guy. When you think about Mantha, we've already said it. We know he's underperforming, but he's a piece for the future of this team. Or at least that's what Yzerman thinks, that, you know, obviously with the sign. So
right. And that's why I asked you and Connor if you guys thought he was a top six or a top three forward in that regards. Like far as league wide, not on the team per se.
Right. No, and my point back to it is like, okay, I can have that conversation of you wanting to get rid of him. That's okay. Because I don't think there might be maybe one or two players on each team that like I would say you don't want to trade or you just can't. They're untouchable. So kind of piggybacking off of that, I don't think that Mantha can't be traded. It's just if you're going to have that conversation, you need to be ready to have like a someone to fill that spot for the future of this team. He's not going to pawn off Mantha for a couple of it all depends on what the draft picks would be, but
pretty unlikely.
Right. So that was my point on Mantha. I mean, who could realistically get back for giving away a core part of our program?
No, and that made me eat my words, right? And that's where I'm still kind of like trying to figure out what would be a quality trade or what would be reasonable for that, which comes to the point where it's like there's not really many players, to make Connor's point that he's been making the whole time, that are similar to that quality or that be willing to be, you know, parted with because
for that price point. Yeah.
Yeah. It's because I can sit here and say, oh, fuck that. Don't sign him at 6 million. Okay. Well, who would you sign at 6 million? And then you look at the people at 6 million. You're like, okay, well, you try to get him. Well, he's not going to take 6 million on the Red Wings. He's taking 6 million because he's on a winning team. So it's one of those things where it's like, you can sit here and talk shit like I do, but I need to figure out who would be a good trade partner,
especially if you don't want any draft picks, because those teams that are going to want Mantha aren't like teams, you know, and they're only going to have draft picks to be able to part with. The one thing that is kind of is nice with Mantha as far as the trade piece goes is that because he's locked down, a team that is in a window that has, you know, if look at like a Colorado where they have probably another 4-year window that they're in a really good shape, maybe 3 to 4 years. And Mantha has that under his belt. So if he goes to a team that is in that has that window there, then you essentially have that pick for multiple years. And it's not one of those last year on the deal, now you have to worry about free agency and you just gave away a draft pick for it. So now you're just like stuck if he doesn't want to be there.
Yeah. No, good point.
You have some flexibility there from like a trade perspective. And overall, I think you're in a decent spot because like I've been saying all along, this team is not built for now, not built for the next year, even the year after that. It's look at 4 years down the line. And at that point, then you're looking at however many years, 1 year left. Then you sign, is it 5 year?
Yeah. Five. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, then you have one year left to figure when you're hopefully in a really good spot. And now you're paying it close to $6 million or $6 million for him. And that's really not that bad, especially with how the cap's looking on a year-to-year basis and looking at other players that produce very similar. So your hope is that he becomes a bargain at that point. And if not, then you don't re-sign him when you absolutely need to, because the team's going to be good.
Right. Yeah. So one thing to mention is with the upcoming expansion draft, we're going to have to protect, I think it's 8 forwards, 1 goalie or 6 forwards or 7 forwards, 3 defensemen or something like that.
That should be easy.
So a lot of people are saying they're going to protect 8 forwards and next the defenseman. There's really no reason to focus on defensemen. We won't have anybody there. That's really,
yeah, because you can't put Sider on that yet, right?
Nope. So Sider's protected. Let's come back to that. Let me pull up the list and then
Do you think there's 8 forwards that like are 8 players on this team worth protecting? If I was Yzerman, I'd be like, well, can I just protect like 4 players and then like. You can do whatever you want with the rest of everybody. Right,
so this is one from the Hockey Writers. It's a little older. This is from November. I read one recently. So here's the exempt Red Wings. These are people that you don't have to protect. Philip Zadina, Moritz Seider, Joe Valino, Jared McIsaac, Philip Larson, Albert Johansson, Victor Brattstrom, Chase Pearson, and Matthias Brome. So none of those have to be protected. And here's a list that are most likely probably going to be protected or should opt to protect 7 forwards, 3 defensemen and a goalie. Here's a list they're thinking. Larkin, Mantha, Bertuzzi, Rasmussen, Fabry, Nemestikov, Svechnikov, Roenick, Chalowski, Lindstrom, and Grice. Reason for not protecting Bernier is he is a free agent, so there's no point. Grice is signed through 2 years. Chalowski, there's also another thing talking about defensemen. Like, is Ernie a defenseman, right?
Ernie's not. He's a forward, like fourth line.
He's a forward. Okay, so who was there's another one? Because Juice wouldn't qualify for some reason
to be protected, or what?
For there's like stipulations that have to fall under how, like who can be put on. Like, you can't just put up like a rookie per se. Like you have to give them they have to play like X amount of NHL games, or their contract has to be signed through X amount of time.
Okay.
What I'll do is I'll post that on the page, because I don't have that right in front of me. I'm not gonna sit here and try to look for it. But there's different stipulations of who we can protect. And so one thing to note, one thing Bobby Ryan said is, even if he did get traded to Seattle, or say he got traded, he's a free agent in the offseason. He just tried to sign back with Detroit afterwards, which was interesting to see.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
Yeah, I was reading an article about that. He really likes Detroit. Bobby Ryan does. I'm not sure. Which, again, I know you guys, he's a mediocre player, but at the price point, $1 million.
No. Let me.
Tyler,
make things clear.
Go ahead. I'll give you your time.
I wouldn't say that he's mediocre. I haven't denied that he's a skilled guy. He's just not. I think when we originally signed him in the offseason, a lot of people were excited because you saw Bobby Ryan in a lot of highlight reels, right? And then there may have been a little bit of excitement attached to his, you know, 4-goal game coming back from his little stint in rehab. I mean, my whole point is that yes, he does improve our roster, but I just didn't want people to think that he was going to be, you know, the same Bobby Ryan that we had seen when he was, you know, picked. What was he picked? Second, third overall, first over? I don't remember.
First round, second by Anaheim. Blah. Can't talk.
That was my only point. I mean, he would be such a good. He would be a great person for. He brings veteran presence, and you look at his playmaking ability, and it's incredible.
And that was my thing, is he was bringing experience to the team that I feel like he wasn't so old where he wasn't doing anything, and he was young enough where he could still have a little bit of like spark in his, you know, spark with him. The one thing that still concerns me overall is this 21 fucking penalty minutes. I still don't know what I watch the games and I don't see him in the penalty box. I don't know where the fuck his penalty minutes come from.
I don't know.
Seriously, do you guys see him in the penalty box, or am I just fucking crazy?
I see him in the penalty box. I just don't know what kind of penalties he's getting. You know, there's good penalties and bad penalties, so it's hard to
100%.
You know, I'd have to just like watch more and figure out like is he being lazy on a back check and hooking somebody or tripping somebody, or is it hard work in the corner and your stick gets caught between their legs when they're reaching for a puck?
Yeah, fair.
You know, I just don't even know. I'll have to watch that more. So that's good.
Yeah, it's kind of either you got to pay attention. Is it lazy plays or is it incidental stuff? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So,
So I was telling Connor beforehand, I don't want you to think I'm crazy with some of the comments I make. I just like to stir conversation.
And
that's with the listeners too. Like, I want you guys to like, don't just because someone does something like Eiserman signed somebody, question it, you know, what would you do differently? What would you think would be a better play just because it's Eiserman, or just because, you know, Blashill does something doesn't mean it's the end all. I like to question and think.
And that's how everyone should look at it. I think that, you know, with the Wings being so bad last year and this year, I think any change we see as like a good change, you know, mm-hmm. and we get automatically so excited about it without questioning it. And I think a lot of people, and I've been guilty of this too. I think that any move that Eiserman makes, everyone's just like, oh, it's definitely a good move just because Eiserman made it, you know. When has he ever steered anyone wrong before?
On that same point though, is that it's not like this is his first time on a team being a GM. He's been in Detroit for obviously a player for 20 years, but then he's also been a GM at and shown high, a very, very high level of success. So I think it'd be unfair for people to not give him the benefit of the doubt. He's earned that. And that's where I'm at right now. So he, I give him, you know, a couple years to make moves and me to not question it completely because of what he's shown me in the past. Now, if he keeps doing that and things aren't resulting, then yeah, we take a step back and understand what, like, take a look back at the past couple years of moves. And if they don't pan out, then you have that conversation. But right now he hasn't shown me anything that doesn't deserve my trust.
Right.
No, for sure. And it has nothing to do with distrust, Connor. To you know, go off your thing. It's just me. I just like to be critical and try to think of what would I do differently if I was the GM, or what would, you know, what could be a better move. And that's why, you know, mm-hmm. like I said, Tyler asked me, who would I trade for Mantha? It's kind of like, well, shit, I don't fucking know. I guess I'm not the GM because I don't know.
And that's tough for us because, you know, we don't get that call. We're not sitting in the office there. We don't have a team say, hey, we're offering you a second round pick plus this prospect for Mantha. And so we can't take a look back. We can only look at that. Yeah. From a hypothetical standpoint. Now, if we're talking about drafts and trades in general, I mean, we touched on it a little bit before. If with Bernier being a free agent and not being protected for the most part, or shouldn't be protected, that would you guys not look to try to get something back for him?
In my 100%.
Like, hey, I actually had that written down too. Yeah.
100%. Yeah, I think Bernier's playing great. And I think that if we were a couple years down the road and we're a 500 team, then you probably keep him and try to sign him long term. But and like long term is a couple years, not just you're signing for a year or whatever, just because he's shown that some good stats and being on a really bad team, and he's giving us a chance to win day in and day out. I don't think that he's going to be here when the team is playing well, and he'll be a little bit older by that point. Try to get somebody back now. And at the trade deadline, people always need goalies, especially those fringe teams.
Yep, I agree. No, I think we should trade them. Good point. Good point, Connor.
Now, kind of going off of that too, I had a couple players written down, and there were, so Bernier, I had written down as a question mark because there's kind of, I could see both ways of it, right? Because if you get rid of him, I mean, we could get some future assets for him or whatever, but then you're filled with that. Well, you have that problem of having to fill that goaltending position again for the next season. So it's kind of like, where are you going to go with that? But I also had Helm written down as a question mark, because I know that he hasn't been producing well at all this season, but over the last couple of games he's been playing well, and if he continues to do that, I could see some teams sparking some interest in that as a depth guy. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I see that. I mean, it just takes the right piece. He's not going to hurt any roster, you know, and being a depth piece, like, people, you always need that. You always look at these really, really good teams and playoff teams, and their top three, their top five forwards look great. Their top three, top four D look great. But you take a look back, and like, a lot of their downfalls is getting later in the playoffs, and they get tired, and you need that third and fourth line to start producing, or at least not be minus. And he's that guy, that could, you know, help a team. And all you look for in a third and fourth line is to end the game being even, or potentially, you know, eating up ice time, end the game being even, and potentially getting a goal and sparking some success in the offensive zone. And hopefully the team can carry on that momentum.
Absolutely. Now, I actually had Luke Glendening down here as well. I mean, this year he's already pretty much caught up to his season that he had last year. He had 9 points in 60 games. And in 20 games, or I forget exactly how many games he's played this year, but 7 points already.
21.
Yeah.
21 games played, 7 points.
Going on Glendening, though, and actually going back to Helm, too, the one thing we have to think about, too, is that we're not – with Helm, I just cannot see a return there that would be hugely beneficial for us.
Nope.
Where I think Glendening could probably get more because what he brings, especially on the faceoffs, like, I'm not, that's like such an important piece in playoffs, is having that puck control, and having a player like that is you could if a team is struggling there, they're willing to give up a bigger piece. Not saying he's going to fetch a lottery, but I just can't see that with Helm. You know, it would almost be like getting him off of our
financial
situation.
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of my point of trying to get rid of him. But you're right. Like, what? For one, is it going to make
dumping
sense?
Players for dumping sake? Yeah, it does. Exactly. Like, it could make sense. Who knows? If, like, depending on where Eisman wants the team to be in a couple years, like from a signing contract situation, then it could make sense to just try to, you know, hopefully give him away and you get a seventh round pick. Because, like, that's honestly what I see is a late draft pick. And at that point, you're just getting him off your books.
Right. And what about Mark Stahl? Do you guys think that anyone's going to make any moves for him?
I think that's a good trade.
Yeah, and well, I think people are probably thinking like right now we're willing to trade
but
everybody.
Is that going to be enticing to other teams though, Dustin? That's my point.
Oh, no, that was my emphasis. That was my asterisk.
Yeah.
He's a little expensive.
Okay, gotcha.
But I think people will look at him. He's known for being a good defenseman, especially like, you know, like Connor's saying, a playoff team's going to want something like that, especially depth. So I'd like to see Eisman move him just because of the fact that I feel like he got him to move him.
Yeah.
Or use him as a trade piece.
I think that people will like listen and think that we're willing to trade everybody. And that is pretty much true. Like there's not a person that you could bring up to be like, well, how about him? Could he be traded? I'm like, I'm willing to do anything this team is not built right now that we're like seeing a long-term success with the current players. Like most of these people are movable, you know?
Well, Connor, that's why, like we talked about, I was asking, you know, how we felt about, you know, Larkin. Is he a top three forward? And when I say top three forward, I'm talking about top three forward on any team in the league.
Yeah, like if he moved to a different team, would be a top three forward.
Yep. So, yeah. Mantha, is he a top three forward? Is he a top six forward? You know, I think we all agree that he's more of a top six forward. If he hits his ceiling, he's a top three forward for sure. But right now, I feel like he's top six. We talked about Bertuzzi. I love Bertuzzi, but realistically, he's a cusp of a top six. He's good.
But Larkin, he's not, go ahead.
And I was just going to say, Larkin's my last one. You know, I feel like he's a top six forward. He could be a top three forward eventually. I don't think he's there now.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say, is that being a top six forward, that's definitely not a bad thing. Like those top two lines, you see superstars on the second line, and you see stars in general being on the second line. Because when you look at these really good teams, and especially at the centerman position, you don't have flexibility there. Like if Larkin's going somewhere else and you look at a centerman on a playoff team, that guy is getting $9 million a year. You know, they're a absolute stud and one of the best in the league at their position. So moving on the second line and being a playoff team as a second line center is you're probably, you know, still a top two, top three player on the team. But with your position, you don't have that flexibility there, given that on a good team, that number one center is carrying the team.
Yeah,
no, absolutely.
Now, one thing I wanted to kind of mention, just to, when we were talking about Eisman a little bit earlier, I thought of something that maybe Wings fans don't really think a lot about. They see the success that he had in Tampa, but they also don't know exactly who he had there when he arrived. Stamkos and Hedman were already drafted. So when you can look at
those
two
guys.
Yeah, you can look at the two teams and compare the success, but you also have to remember the pieces that he already had when he got there. You know what I mean? So it's going to take some time for the Wings.
Yeah, so on that point you just made though. On that point. That's the point I've been trying to make about Larkin and Mantha is I don't give a shit if there's the rest of the team shitty. Those two players have to be performing at the highest caliber they can perform at every single fucking night. Just because, that's my thing with any player. Like, I don't give a shit if you're on a bad team. Just because you're on a bad team doesn't mean you play bad. That makes literally no sense, and that's dumb reasoning. So my thing is, for being on a bad team, I want to see everybody perform at a high rate. That plain and simple.
Yeah. Well, so when you do mention that though, when you talk about points, you were trumpeting Bobby Ryan with 12 points and Larkin has 11.
Where's that standing in the, hold on, why you look, keep on talking. I'm trying to figure out where we are as far as league wide.
No, I'm yeah, that would be good to look up, but I'm just saying you were trumpeting Ryan's 12 points, but Larkin has 11. So if you're going to give any criticism, I mean, you can't really, you can't really give it to Larkin that much. Maybe Mantha, you know, he's sitting at third on the team currently at 9 points, which is still not good in his, you know, 22 games that he's played. But
right, but Larkin's still not performing at the same rate he was last year. So, oh my God. Our top performer, Bobby Ryan, is 129th in the league. Larkin is, where you at, Larks?
But do you see my point though, is that you were mentioning that Bobby Ryan was doing well, and when you look at the two in terms of skill, are they not equal? I mean, Larkin, he had a great rookie season, but I feel like that was kind of, I'm not going to say a one and done thing, because I think he has the potential to get to, you know, 25 goals again, but I don't know. It goes back to the conversation that we were having a little bit earlier, and I think Connor, you would maybe want to jump in as well, but you can't look at a player just in terms of just in terms of 100%. Stats.
100%, and that's what Ken Daniels and Mickey Raven were talking about the other night, is they literally brought up that exact point, Tyler, about Larkin, like specifically. You can't just look at his point production, and I'm not just saying point production. He's a good player. I'm just saying when he's not performing by, if there's a half, my point being is you can't play at 90% at any point in 60 minutes.
And
that's it.
I agree. For Larkin specifically, I rarely, if ever, see him take a shift off. And that's
me either. He's a hardworking player. It's more about Mantha, I guess, is my biggest cusp.
That's the conversation. I think for Larkin, if you put a piece around him, I mean, it's so difficult. Like what we said before is, or what I was saying before is, if you put him on a different team, he is not the superstar $9 million, $10 million a year guy, set like top line center. He can be a top line center, but man, he's not there right now. So it's very difficult to say you need to put up 60 points without 60 points in like 50 games when you don't have another guy that you can bounce off of, especially when you're eating up 20 minutes of ice time and giving it your all.
I mean, it's a good point.
He plays all the time on the worst place team, and it is really really hard. So I agree, you can't take any shifts off, especially a guy that you're trying to build around. And I think that, you know, the team is looking at that. Eisman's looking at that, and that's why I think it's so bad when you take a look at any guy that's taking any time off. Because if you're on a bad team and you're not one of the top three forwards, top 2D, you could be gone immediately. So they need to be giving it their all because they're on a bad team. And if you're on a bad team and not giving it your all and being like one of the worst players out there, that means you're a fringe NHL guy, not just a fringe Red Wing guy.
Yeah. My point. That's my biggest thing, is like, that's what's making me upset, is because there's nights when they take it off. What game was that? They look like a bunch of beer leaguers.
Oh,
what do you mean? What game?
No, right? No, but the one specifically where we're just like, holy shit. It was just like, I can't quite remember. It was a torching.
It was 4-0 in the first game. No, it was Florida. It was Florida, 7-2.
Florida.
Yeah, 7-2 or 7-3, something like that. But yeah, that was just awful.
It's like those nights. Like, it's unexcusable. Like, I don't give a shit if you're on the fourth line. You should be busting your ass. Like, there's no reason not to.
Right. And yeah. And I think, I feel like it all just can stem back to coaching again. So if we switch the coach, then you can find out if there's still a problem with the players.
So I did get a hot take from him. I'm not going to mention who, but sounds like he might be out next year.
I've been hoping for this the last two seasons. So let's see.
A close source
true.
Though.
Yeah.
A close source.
No, I know that. I'm just saying that I've been hoping for this. So, I said it last season. I understand.
Is it Blashill? Blashill's your source?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, he messaged us.
Me. Yeah. He's like, don't tell anybody, but
I'm just
tired.
Looking for a fourth on the podcast?
No, you'd probably tank us too. Just kidding.
No, you're not.
No.
Right? Hey, boys, Connor made a point. We've been talking for 55 minutes.
Yes. Yeah, no, and like we started off talking about the Red Wings. I know we've been talking 55, so we can wrap it up too. But I wanted to end with just saying that this is a good spot, back-to-back wins, and they play today. I'm excited to watch again today to see if they can build on this momentum. I think Chicago is going to come out really hard, so it'll be a very fun game to watch.
It'll be a good test for their consistency, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm glad they've been showing up to the rink the past couple of games, because that's it makes it for fun fanship. It's
well, it makes them want to watch the game.
Yeah, yes. Exactly, which is great. So I'm happy about that.
Hey, one more thing. I think they're going to start having fans back at the stadium soon.
Ooh. Ayo.
Just because I got into a raffle, like I was telling you, Tyler, for some tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I thought about it, so right now they must be letting in like season ticket holders only, or like a section of season ticket holders or something. I'm not sure, but hopefully fans will be allowed back soon. Columbus is allowing fans.
Yeah, Nashville is at, they're not at full capacity, obviously, but.
Yeah, Andy Vila was there.
With Max.
Oh, well, how about that? Thanks for the invite, boys. Yeah. Thanks for the invite. One more thing. Don't forget to check out the post, Who's That Red Wing?
Yes.
So
it's not Gordie Howe, by the way.
Yeah, it's not Gordie Howe or Steve Yzerman. But check it out. Anything else, boys?
Nope.
Let's get the puck out of here, and we'll finish up the interview with Derek next week.
Yes,
tune in next week.
All right. See ya.